Greet you this morning in Jesus' name. Bring you greetings from Pennsylvania, Providence Congregation. You're welcome to stop there and worship with us if you have opportunity. It's been a privilege to worship here, to be with you here, and be inspired, have our minds stretched as we think about the life of Job, as we think about all the various things that have come up in the songs and the devotions, and it's been a challenge to me already. Trust that our worship to God can continue, and He will receive honor and glory for our time together here. As we live and go about life, I don't know really what it's like in Missouri here for sure, but I know what it's like in Pennsylvania and for myself. So we go from day to day, we come to the realization that most things come with a cost. Most things have a cost that goes with them, at least good things or things that are important. And I'm talking in our common everyday things. If we eat, we can eat whatever we want, but often it soon shows. We can be free with our money, but we'll soon find poverty. That's a common laws that we all deal with. We can exercise our liberties freely. We can go as fast as we want down the highway, but there's probably going to be a cost that comes with that. We can walk into a store and pick something up, but you're either going to pay for it on the way out, or you'll find there's some other costs that are associated with that. Those are some laws that are in place in a natural sense, but the same carries over in a spiritual sense. Most times the initial self-control was far less costly than the resulting cost or the ending cost if you don't control yourself initially. Being a Christian and getting to heaven is no different. Someone has said that the entrance fee to the kingdom of heaven is nothing. It's free. But the annual subscription is everything. The entrance fee into the kingdom of heaven is nothing, but the annual subscription is everything. And we know that salvation is free, but as we experience that salvation, as proof of that salvation in our life, we're going to respond with our lives, with everything. And God is looking for that. It's not really something that we don't earn our salvation. We don't earn our way to heaven. And yet, as we've accepted that salvation, that's something that's going to give evidence that we've experienced that salvation. And it's part of the Christian life. And we'll look at that. But I want to be clear. The salvation is free. And we can't earn our salvation in any way. And yet, part of the Christian life, just the same, is to deny ourselves. And I guess that would be the title this morning, Deny Yourself Now or Later. Deny Yourself Now or Later. You can turn to Matthew chapter 16. We want to read some verses there. Matthew 16, 24 to 26. Matthew 16, verse 24. Then said Jesus unto the disciples, If any man will come after me, let him deny himself and take up his cross and follow me. And whosoever will save his life shall lose it, and whosoever will lose his life for my sake shall find it. For what is a man profited if he shall gain the whole world and lose his own soul? Or what shall a man give in exchange for his soul? So you see the idea of a cross coming into play there, and the idea of the cost, the effect that salvation brings into our life, and that we need to give ourselves. The harder we try to hang on to our own life the things that we would like to hang on to, the harder we try to hang on to them, the more we lose them and the more we die. But if we can give those things up for Christ's sake, we will find true life and true meaning. Now, let's just turn back to Luke's account of this. Luke 14, he adds a bit more of an explanation what it means to give ourselves, deny ourselves. Luke 14, verses 25 to 33. Luke 14, verse 25. And there went great multitudes with him, and he turned and said unto them, If any man come to me, and hate not his father and his mother and wife and children and brethren and sisters, yea, and his own life also, he cannot be my disciple. And whosoever doth not keep his own, whosoever doth not bear his cross and come after me, cannot be my disciple. For which of you, intending to build a tower, sitteth not down first, and counteth the cost, whether he have sufficient to finish it? Lest happily, after he hath laid the foundation, and is not able to finish it, all that behold it begin to mock him, saying, this man began to build, and was not able to finish. Or what king, going to make war against another king, sitteth not down first, and consulteth whether he be able, with 10,000, to meet him that cometh against him with 20,000? Or else, while the other is yet a great way off, he sendeth an embassage, and desireth conditions of peace. So likewise, whosoever he be of you that forsaketh not all that he hath, he cannot be my disciple. Says, if any come after me, if anyone wants to follow him, if anyone wants to be a disciple of Christ, there's a cost that goes with that. And if he doesn't, we understand that word hate means to love more. If anyone loves more than God, his father or his mother or his family, his children, his brethren, his sisters, or his own life also. If he loves his own life also more than God, he cannot be a disciple. Whosoever forsaketh not all that he hath, there's a cost that goes with being a disciple of God. And he wants us to understand that cost. He wants us to count that cost. He wants us to understand that being a Christian, following him, comes with a cost and comes with giving of ourselves like that. There are many today that teach a less costly gospel, or that a gospel doesn't cost much, don't have to do much, you just have to believe, and you're saved. That's not according to what the Bible teaches. And it's easy for us to start assimilating that today and to try to hang on to our own things in this society and this world system that we live in. We're taught that we owe ourselves certain things, that we deserve many things, and that it's right for us to have these things. But Christ's teaching is clear. Whosoever forsaketh not all that he hath, he cannot be my disciple. We must love God more than these things we have around us. A truly gospel humble person is not a self-hating person or a self-loving person, but a gospel humble person. A truly gospel humble person, or someone who knows God and has the right sense of humility. There's two ditches here that we can get off on. There's many who have gotten off on the ditch of denying themselves of and trying to earn their own salvation, trying to live and earn salvation by denying themselves. But then there's a reaction to that, and there's many who feel like we need to have a certain amount of self-esteem, and that's taught today, that we need to have a certain amount of self-esteem, and you owe certain things to yourself, and you need to have them. You need to be careful not to deny yourself too much. That's the other ditch. I believe God has given us an ego, and I'd like to study into that a little bit more, exactly what that is, but we have a certain amount of self-esteem that we have, and I believe there's probably a purpose for that. But you could compare that to a part of your body, say your toes. And you have toes that serve a purpose, and they're important, and they need to be there. They serve a function. But they don't draw a lot of attention to themselves. They don't. If a toe draws attention to itself, it's going to stop the rest of your other. It's going to slow down what you can do. Probably just about stall you, because it's out of its place. But it just works. It just takes its place, doesn't draw attention to itself, and it helps you accomplish what you're going to do. A lot of our parts of our body are like that. And I believe our ego or our self-esteem or however you want to consider that part of our being, our creation, probably serves a place. But if it draws attention to itself, if we're trying to draw attention to ourselves, it becomes out of place and it really limits what we can accomplish, what we can get done. We don't want to be a proud person. We don't want to be someone who puts ourselves down. But we want to be someone who puts Christ up. We want to be someone who esteems Christ. And I think that's a proper balance there. And it's a challenge to find ways to do that. All right, let's look a little bit at what self-denial is, and then I want to talk a little bit about some practical ways of how we live. Romans 7 verse 18 says this: "For I know that in me, that is in my flesh, dwelleth no good thing. For to will is present with me, but how to perform that which is good I find not. I know that in me, that is in my flesh, dwelleth no good thing." Is that true for you? Is that true? Who all is that true for? How does that apply to everyone? We tend to think pride, of course, works against that. And the self-esteem lifts ourselves up, says that we have worth. We're important. That the apostle found that in himself, that is in his flesh, dwelleth no good thing. Nothing leads to renouncing self or helping to find a sense of humility, helping to find our proper place. Nothing helps to do that as much as spiritual meditation or understanding, coming to grips with the fact that in myself dwelleth no good thing, that there's corruption and wickedness in my heart. If our soul has grasped human depravity, if your soul has grasped human depravity, you have been forced to deny yourself. In other words, if we come to a true understanding of our humanity and of our flesh, we will realize that we need to deny ourselves, that we need to put that flesh aside. No man can conclude in his heart that in me dwelleth no good thing, and then continue to live for himself, continue to put himself up, and continue to serve himself. We need to come to grips with our flesh in our humanity, and realize, think about where that would take us. Think about what that's promoting and what that's going to do me, where it's going to end up, and realize how that contrasts with God's plan. The greatest burden we have to carry in life is self. The most difficult thing we have to manage is self. And laying off our burdens, therefore, the first one you must get rid of is yourself. Self is something that is a burden. If we're going to follow Christ and we're going to serve Him, self is something that we need to get rid of, something we need to lay off. We need to crucify. You must hand yourself into the care and keeping of God. He made you, and therefore He understands you, and He knows what you need. And we must trust Him to do it. We must trust Him with our lives. Another saying or thought, a number of these, a lot of teaching, a lot of old sayings that are accurate, biblical, about this subject. I believe many of them came from a couple hundred years ago. It's not a real popular thing today. But it was taught. It was important a couple hundred years ago, and it's important now. It's important today. Self is the most treacherous enemy and the most insinuating deceiver in the world. Of all other vices, it is both the hardest to find out and the hardest to cure. Self is a treacherous enemy and the most insinuating deceiver in the world. You know, you think of the enemies you have, or the things that you're facing that are challenging you, that are making you difficult, your life difficult. If you look at it, the Bible would teach that self is the most difficult one. It's the one that we have to work the hardest against. And it's a deceiver. If we allow it to, that will teach us wrong. It will get us to the point that we feel that we are justified in ourselves, and that we can find our own way, and we don't need to depend on others. We don't need to depend on God. It will deceive us to the end. We need to see it for what it is. The supreme challenge you will face in making Christ-honoring biblical challenges is dying to self. The biblical perspective concerning self is exactly opposite to what the wisdom of the world proclaims. The world, of course, works much against the idea of denying ourselves. Now, turn to Matthew 19, verse 21. And this is the account of the rich young ruler. I'll just read from verses 16 to probably 21. Matthew 19, verse 16. And behold, one came and said unto him, Good master, what good thing shall I do that I may have eternal life? That's what we all want. That's what we all desire. And he said unto him, Why callest thou me good? There is none good but one, that is God. But if thou wilt enter into life, keep the commandments. And he saith unto him, Which? Jesus saith, Thou shalt do no murder, thou shalt not commit adultery, thou shalt not steal, thou shalt not bear false witness. Honor thy father and thy mother, and thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself. The young man saith unto him, All these things have I kept from my youth up. What lack I yet? We talked about those commandments this morning. And he understood those, and he was keeping those. Jesus saith unto him, If thou wilt be perfect, go and sell that thou hast, and give to the poor, and thou shalt have treasure in heaven, and come and follow me." This young man had many things, and he was doing many things right. But to be a disciple of Christ, to follow that through, God wanted his heart. God wanted him to... And we don't really understand if it was... Sometimes we like to think that it wasn't the thing so much. It was more the desire of his heart. And this man was in a position where he had to give them up to really get them out of his heart. I'm not sure if I fully comprehend that. But this man, Jesus knew, had to get rid of those things to get them out of his heart so he could be in a position that God could use him. God had a work for this young man. God had a plan for this young man. He had things for this young man to do that he could have done. But he knew that he couldn't do them with those things still in his possession. He had to get those things out of his life so that he could follow Christ the way he should. God has work for each of us to do. And we must be ready to let off whatever will distract us from that work. We don't always know what that is. But God has ways of touching our lives. And taking things that... The things that would distract us. And things that would challenge us. Keep us from reaching our full potential. It's interesting the way God touches our possessions. He touches the things we have and helps us to understand where our heart is. That would probably be another thing that this young man saw. He came to Jesus and he wanted to know what he needed to do. What's the next step to follow you? And Jesus showed him in his heart what his problem was. Jesus showed him in his heart what the issue was. His attachment was to those things. We can think many times when we have some things taken away from us, when we have an accident or lose some things, we realize how close those things have grown to our heart and how much we miss them and how much it tears us. I'll let it at that. "For if ye live after the flesh, ye shall die. But if ye through the Spirit do mortify the deeds of the body, ye shall live." If we live after the flesh, the Bible says, ye shall die. But if ye through the Spirit do mortify the deeds of the body, ye shall live. If we can give up the flesh and its desires, we shall live. We know that. And yet our flesh pulls us. There's things that we think that people owe us. We think that we deserve some things. We deserve respect. We deserve certain things from our children. We deserve certain things from our wife. We deserve certain things from the church. We deserve things from our employer. If we live after the flesh, we'll die. How much do we really deserve those things? "They that are after the flesh mind the things of the flesh, and they that are after the Spirit the things of the Spirit." Can we lift our minds up? "They that are Christ have crucified the flesh with the affections and lusts." So if you're Christ, says you have crucified the flesh. To be a Christian, to serve Christ, to continue in that way, we need to crucify our flesh with the affections and lust. How much do I say the word "I" when I'm talking to someone else? How much do I talk about myself? Sometimes we think about it. It stands out when someone writes and there's a lot of the word "I" in it. But how much does that come out of me? How much do I think about myself? How much do I... dwell on what I have and what other people owe me and how much I deserve. how much other people are misunderstanding me. So, number of practical ways that we can understand some of those things about ourselves. And it's easy for those things to creep in and to have an effect on us. Now, there's kind of two different... Well, the thing that we deny ourselves might be a goal or a prize or an object. The Bible talks about someone who's training for a race and he lays aside all the weights and all the things that could be set in our flesh is one of those things that we need to lay aside so that we can go toward that goal, so we can win that prize. It can also be another... As Christ experienced, it's the authority in our life, or it's another person or an authority figure, as when a soldier submits his own will to that of his commanding officer. Someone, and we would understand that in the Roman times, the commanders had, you know, absolute authority. Whatever the commander said, you needed to do, even if it was to walk off the edge of a cliff or whatever. But, and that's true in probably in some areas today. But the question is, who's in charge of your life? Who's giving the direction to your life? Who are you listening to? Who are you following? Who's giving the orders? And it's easy for us to hang on to that control in our own life and to do what we want to do and not to let others speak into our life or give us direction. But God's will is for us to give up that control and to follow His direction. So again, the two areas that self-denial applies to are, number one, the things that bring us security, whether it's status or car or job or house or the other, you know, many other things, tangible or intangible, that we can hang on to. But the second area that self-denial speaks to is the authority in our life. Is it self, or are we serving Him? Are we serving God? How do we live? And we can tell who we're serving by how we live, by what we do, by the things that we... Our life, the way we live our life, is going to show who we're serving. It's going to show who is the authority in our life. So that's the next main point. How do we live? The idea of emptying yourself or setting yourself aside for the sake of others is what real Christian discipleship is all about. And in Philippians 2, let's turn to that. Philippians 2, if you care to. Philippians 2, verses 3 and 4. Let nothing be done through strife or vainglory, but in lowliness of mind let each esteem other better than themselves. Look not every man on his own things, but every man also on the things of others. Let nothing be done through strife or vainglory, but in lowliness of mind esteem others better than yourself. Look on the things of others. But we're to So we're supposed to empty ourselves or set aside our own things and favor others. Put others ahead of ourselves. And it's Christ's command, it's Christ's teaching, and that's one of the things that we're supposed to do. It's a way that we can tell who's in control of our life, if we're serving ourselves, keeping ourselves first, or if we're putting others ahead of ourselves. And we realize there's things that we need to do to take care of ourselves. But again, Christ is the example, and the influence of today tends to speak to us and tends to tell us that, you know, there's some things that we have to do for ourselves. We have to take care of ourselves. And there's a sense in which we do. And yet, I mean, Christ took time aside to sleep, to rest, refresh himself. And yet I think the influence on us is to emphasize that part too much. Emphasize that part more than Christ did himself. If Christ was living today, what would people have to say about him? Was he taking enough time for himself? It speaks to me. It's not easy for our flesh to face this. The first verse there, if there be any. No, I'm sorry. I'm in a different spot. All right. Romans 15, verse 1 says, "We then that are strong ought to bear the infirmities of the weak, and not to please ourselves." So as we have strength and energy and the ability to do things, we're not supposed to just funnel that into or channel that into our own empire. We're not supposed to just channel that into our own gain. But we're supposed to, if we have strength, we have the ability to do things, we have the ability to get out and do more than we need, we're supposed to use that to help others. Bear the infirmities of the weak and not just please ourselves. Even Christ, in verse 3 of Romans 15, 1. That verse is 15, Romans 15, 1. Strong ought to bear the infirmities of the weak and not to please ourselves. And then verse 3, two verses later, says, even Christ pleased not himself. He was the example of that. He didn't serve himself, but he gave his life in service of others. Titus 2:12, teaching us that denying ungodliness and worldly lusts, we should live soberly, righteously, and godly in this present world. Teaching us that we deny ourselves of ungodliness, teaching us that we deny ourselves of those things that are against God, and worldly lusts, the worldly things that our flesh would tend to go after. We deny ourselves of that, and instead, we live soberly. We think about our life. We think about the future. We think about what God has for us. We think about righteousness, what's right and what's wrong, what's going to have, what God's commands are, and living godly in this present world, where we're at. Can we do that? A godly man several hundred years ago said this, "Resolved never henceforward till I die to act as if I were any way my own." He was resolved to never, until he dies, to act in any way my own, but entirely and altogether God's. That was Jonathan Edwards. "Resolved never henceforth till I die to act as if I were any way my own, but entirely and altogether God's." How much do you belong to God? How much are you God's? How much are you keeping for yourself? It's part of the reason that he became well known as a godly person. He was resolved not to serve himself, but to be altogether God's, to serve God altogether. Someone said, "Let God have your life. He can do more with it than you can." We'd like to hang on to our life. We want to do the things we want to do. We want to accomplish and build a bit of an empire for ourselves. Let go of your life. God can do more with it than you can. God can accomplish more with your life than you can. We don't like to give up ourselves. We don't like to let ourselves go and serve someone else. We want to do the things that we want to do. That's not what God wants. It's not who God can use. Self-denial means to accept discipline and counsel. We heard some of that earlier. But it means, really, at its core, discipline is accepting or coming to grips with a higher authority in your life. If you're in charge of your life, You don't need to take, if you're the highest authority, you don't need to take any discipline or counsel. But when a parent tells a child to do something, that child has to come to grips with the idea that he's not the one in charge. There's someone that's above him. And there's someone else giving the orders. And if he doesn't listen, there's going to be some consequences to that. If you're not in charge of your life, but there's someone else above you, that means that there's going to be times that you're going to receive that counsel and that discipline and that advice into your life. You're not the highest authority, but that higher authority is going to have different ways of speaking into your life and giving you direction and directing your path. Something bigger than myself and my own agenda, something that claims a higher place in my allegiance. When people are right with God, they are apt to be hard on themselves and easy on other people. But when they're not right with God, they're easy on themselves and hard on others. That was an observation by John Newton, a man that I believe wrote a number of our songs. When people are right with God, they're apt to be hard on themselves and easy on other people. But when they're not right with God, they are easy on themselves and hard on others. Is that still accurate today? Is that, if we can look in our own heart and realize, it goes back to some of where we started there, if we can understand the depravity of our own nature and the battle that we have to bring that into control, it helps us to be hard on ourselves and to have some mercy for other people, not to be too quick to judge others, because we realize how much we need help ourselves. Someone else has said, I've now concentrated all my prayers into one, and that one prayer is this, that I may die to self and live wholly to Him. It's the way one person summarized his challenge of life, was to die to himself and live wholly to God. If we can do that, that's a good summary of what the Christian life is. If we find self-denial, we find many earthly benefits. There's many earthly benefits that go along with self-denial. Many people who can't control their fleshly desires find themselves in trouble and many physical ailments and issues with authority. There's many earthly benefits to doing this. Although sometimes it could bring persecution to us, can bring persecution to God's followers. Society does to some extent. They deny themselves for the blessing it brings. They realize that there's some things that it's wise to follow, some ways to places to deny yourself so that other people respect you and so that they can have a position or whatever. But it's a godly principle. And if we're going to serve God, if we're going to, go back to that thing, it's not the entrance fee to heaven. The entrance fee is free. But it is the annual subscription. It is what God expects and what God's looking for. If we're a Christian, if we've accepted salvation, we are going to give ourselves to Him. At each stage of spiritual growth, more self-denial is required. More painful blows to self. More reckless decision to serve the Lord Christ with consequential abandonment of one's own life. Saying from someone. But it's at each, self-denial is not something you're going to conquer and it's going to be passed. But each level you grow closer to God as a level of denying yourself more and accepting more from Him. Abandoning your own self and making a reckless decision to follow Christ no matter where it takes you, no matter what it is, no matter what direction He gives you. You're going to give up yourself and you're going to follow him more closely. Each level we grow closer to him is more of that. Looking unto Jesus, the author and finisher of our faith, who for the joy that was set before him endured the cross, despising the shame, and is set down at the right hand of the throne of God. You know, if you were a person of authority and you were sent to another country, you know, normally if someone who has authority and prestige and power goes and visits another country, they go for their own pleasure. They might serve a diplomatic mission there, but normally they're going to enjoy a bunch of the benefits of that country. They're going to go sightseeing and you know, they're going to be served because they're from a better country. They're from a higher place, and they're going to go there. But Christ came down from heaven, came to this earth, and he didn't seek any of the pleasures and benefits of this world. He came down from that higher place and served and made himself like the lowest of mankind and allowed mankind, those evil, carnal men that he came to save, he allowed them to crucify him and to put him on the cross to die for us. Talk about self-denial, denying himself of the pleasures that he could have experienced, denying himself of his own will, his own desires, the things that mankind normally would seek after. He denied himself of that. May we follow Christ's example of self-denial and so be worthy to be with him in our Father's kingdom. Let's pray.